when we're doing sales of any sort, the moment we come across a salesperson, people turn off, right? Yeah. They love to buy, they don't want to be sold to. Mm-hmm. So we have to become human as fast as we possibly can by being, you know, completely vulnerable and open.
Great experiences build great leaders. Great leaders build great teams. This is Building Great Sales Teams.
All right, y'all. Welcome back to Building Great Sales Teams. We've got a special edition for you guys today. I've got Donnie Boivin here. He's the owner and creator of Success Champions Networking, a B2B networking group. And the reason that we're doing this live today is because we actually had an event yesterday called How to Network Without Being a Jackass that Donnie put on, and it was fantastic. We talked about B2B networking and how to find out what someone's referral partner is rather than trying to just do this like the old school thing of B&I and trading cards. And then you get home, you're like, those are all going in the trash.
Right.
So let's get right into that. What do you recommend our B2B folks do?
Yeah, you know, in this day and age, you don't even need to carry business cards. You know, for me, there's so much digital technology. Like, I love the QR code off of LinkedIn. And let's be honest, most business cards you're going to get, like back in the day when somebody handed me a business card, I had a trick where the people I need to follow up with, I kept the good ones like in my back left pocket, right, the ones I didn't care about my back right. You know, but in this day and age, if somebody's cell phone is the most powerful thing you can get. Mm-hmm. So most times people come up and they're like, hey, do you want to connect? And I'll instantly just pull out my phone. I'll go to LinkedIn, hit the search bar. As soon as the search bar pops up, it goes to the right and hit a button and a QR code will pop up. And I'll have most people connect with me at that QR code.
Yeah.
Because now they're following me on LinkedIn. If I really want to follow up with them, like there's something that we can both do in a win-win type scenario, mm-hmm, then I will ask for their cell phone number and say, hey, give me your cell phone. I'll text you my information. Because now I've got their personal cell. There's nothing better than having that. Because now you're going to get them back and forth,
yeah,
in phenomenal conversations. Business cards are just something you're going to throw in a fishbowl, mm-hmm, and hope you win. But all the fishbowls are rigged anyways, so there's no point in even playing a game. I mean,
yeah.
So, I haven't carried a business card in probably 10, 15 years.
100%. And a lot of this you did from when you were working with Sandler, right?
Yeah.
And so if you guys don't know, Sandler Sales Training, yep, they're one of the biggest training companies in the nation. I came up with Southwestern Consulting.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah,
that was your competition,
yeah,
I would imagine.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's who I learned from. That's how I learned how to sell the way customers want to buy.
Right, right.
It's one of my favorite trainings that I like to put on. But tell me about your time at Sandler. You were one of the top trainers,
yeah,
there.
You know, I never had a desire to be a sales trainer. Mm-hmm. I had just left a commercial printing career. Sandler had sought me out because of my success in there. And when they first started me on, they were like, hey, we need a salesperson, not a trainer. I said, cool, because I don't want to train. I don't want to be in front of rooms. I don't want to teach people. Right. I just want to go sell. Well, 2 years into working with Sandler, and I reached such a capacity of new clients and everything else that the guy who I later became a partner with looked at me and said, hey, you can't make any more money unless you start training. And I said, I just never wanted to be a trainer. Yeah. And so I then became a trainer. And at that point, my revenue went to zero. Mm-hmm. And because all that stuff I'd done before, I'd done to build his company. Yeah. And now I became a trainer. So 2 years in, I went back to making nothing. And then work my way up to one of the top sales trainers in the country. I don't know what that means, but I'm really good at flapping my gums in front of them.
I think it's the, you know, and I've heard you speak several times now. We had you on the podcast about 260 episodes ago or so. Yeah, so we're pretty deep in this thing now. I think you were like number 8 or number 9.
Really?
You were early
on. Awesome.
I was like, I gotta get this guy on the podcast. And one of my favorite things that I saw was like, oh, he's got a farm.
Yeah.
You know, and he's got baby goats.
Yep.
So tell us about the baby goats.
So my wife and I, you know, the career had taken off. We were doing some really, really cool things. And I just wanted to get out of the country. I knew as my career is going, to end up meeting more people are going to want to get in touch with me. So kind of had this thing where I want to be the most famous person that nobody in my hometown knows.
Nice.
So we moved out to the country to get away. She wanted animals. And so that worked out. I mean, literally, we found our dream farm. Mm-hmm. You know, I ended up building a second house on the property for my mother-in-law. And, you know, I had just turned 40, and I started hearing guys like Gary Vee and Tim Ferriss and all these guys talking about being an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. And so late of 2017, I decided to walk away from Sandler and everything. And after I bought the farm, after mm-hmm. I built the house from mother-in-law, and start my own business.
Yeah.
And that's when everything went crazy with that. And, you know, I ended up starting my business almost completely broke because all I had was success from past years. But we put dwarf Nigerians on there, turkeys, duck, geese, got 9 dogs on the property. You name it. We just have a blast with it. And who knew? I post a video of baby goats on freaking LinkedIn and it goes crazy. I just would never have thought of posting baby goats that people would be that into it, but it's just so different from what the normal content on there. Mm-hmm. People just eat it up. And so I have a lot of fun with it. But
yeah, I mean, that's real. And that's how you build your brand and build your authority, is you be a human being.
Right.
And that's one of the takeaways we had from last night that you were really pouring into people about, was like, hey, you know, I post the Renaissance Fair pictures and the baby goat pictures and my wife and the trips that we take and stuff like that.
Dude, let's be honest, man. There's some unwritten law that says you can be a jerk to salespeople, right? If you don't believe me, you know, take a telemarketer call or get a cold call in your office, and we automatically turn into this monster because we just don't want to deal with the people. So when we're doing sales of any sort, the moment we come across a salesperson, people turn off, right? Yeah. They love to buy, they don't want to be sold to. Mm-hmm. So we have to become human as fast as we possibly can, by being, you know, completely vulnerable and open. Mm-hmm. Like, we got Peyton here that's helping with all the camera stuff. And I told him, I'm like, dude, everywhere you go, tell him you're just starting out. You're just figuring this stuff out.
Yeah.
And watch people lean in. They're like, oh, cool. What are you into? What are you doing? And the likes and that open vulnerability. Well, now that we live in this day and age of social media, you've got a platform out there that can let people into your world. Dude, I don't look like a guy who's going to have baby goats and go to, you know, Renaissance fairs and the like. So it allows the world to see a whole different side of me that makes me more human and more approachable. Because there's people that look at me and say, God, he's pretty cold. He's pretty direct, you know.
Right.
Till you see me on stage and you'll see a whole other version of me as well. So, but I just love the world we're in, that being who you are, geeking out on what you geek out on, allows you to find your people, your crowd, and get people to really lean into you. It's just awesome.
Yeah, and it creates this filter of people that you like being around.
Yeah,
you know, it took about 2 years, but now I have this filter that only Donnie Boy Beans and Peyton's and Kai's show up at my door now.
100%.
You know, it's fantastic.
Well, and that's the reason I wore the ball cap, the t-shirts, I cuss and do it, because, you know, it's an instant filter.
It turned me off at first. It wasn't very professional.
So. You got over it. but I remember, you know, early on, I gave a speech at a podcast convention. And at that time, I was still in button-down shirts. I was in blue jeans and you know,
boots. Yeah.
But I didn't wear ball cap. I didn't hardly cuss. Yeah. I was still kind of corporate America. And, you know, I remember going on that stage, and for whatever reason, I threw my hands out and I'm like, where are all my badasses at? And the crowd went freaking wild. And I was like, wait. And I realized that was the first time that I'd shown up kind of as myself. And from that point on, it was ball caps, t-shirts, and boots, because that's just what I wear every day.
Yeah. There's nothing like an eloquently timed fuck.
In so many different
ways. It wakes people up.
But I mean, it's also an accentuated, you know, there's something to be said, you know, you can tell somebody, hey, let's go, you got this.
Yeah.
And be like, dude, let's get out of your own fucking way and let's get after it. And you watch the dynamic.
It's a trigger.
Yep.
It's a trigger. 100%.
And let's be honest, we all talk that way anyways, you know, so it's only some reason became, you know, inappropriate in a corporate setting.
Yeah.
That's why we do our own things. Hell, the corporate setting will create our own world.
Absolutely. And those are my people, 100%. You know, it was a little awkward for me coming over from, you know, being in these masterminds, and it's mainly business owners, and we get to kind of do whatever we want, to now I'm B2B network.
Yep.
You know, and some of these people are employees, and some of them, you know, have benefits packages and everything.
Yep.
So like, we, you know, it's harder to find common ground when that happens. So I had to make this transition where, all right, now I'm dealing with more of the B2B and everything, but it's been fantastic launching the chapter here in San Antonio. First of all, if you haven't, look up successchampionsnetworking.com.
Yep.
And check out this group, because one of the things I appreciate, and you guys know especially with my solo episodes, I'm super analytical, super dialed in.
Extremely.
And I'm all about SOPs, right? And all a script is an SOP on how to sell somebody, right? And so one of the things I appreciate when we launched chapter one, it's 8 weeks of training for the president, okay? There's 5 board positions, but the president has to go through 8 weeks of training first. So I'm like, immediately, I'm like, challenged right away. It's like, I've got to go through 8 weeks of training before I even get to launch, you know? So the patience challenge is tough. And then everything is systematic. You know, our meetings are dialed in. The number one comment at the end of every meeting from a visitor is how well organized and how well timed it is, and everybody's on point.
We do. We hear it all the time. And, you know, there's other organizations that do have some really good work, you know, order to them and whatnot. But, man, I want to get in. Let's do business. Let's get to work as fast as possible. Yeah. And if you don't have structure, you can't.
Right.
You know, and, you know, I'm not a structure guy. You know, I'm going to shoot from my hip and just see what happens. So thank God Jessica's been around to build out all the processes and systems.
Beast, yeah.
And dude, she whips people into freaking gear. She puts them through training to make sure everything gets freaking locked and loaded.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's allowed us to scale chapters fast, get people to success fast, because you always know how to get to that next conversation, the next virtual coffee, you know, get into the next, you know, point of the meeting. So it's been a lot of fun.
Well, and the structure is a huge piece of it, but what I appreciate is that you're here.
Yeah.
You know, we just launched this chapter about 3 months ago, and, you know, we've been steadily growing one member every couple weeks or so. And I don't know if this is a play I'll normally run, where you do an event after a chapter's launched in that town to kind of garner interest and everything. But what that said to me right away is, hey, I've got support from the top all the way down. And Jessica's here too.
Right.
Who crushed it on the training and everything.
Yep.
And this is what's cool about it. You had your event yesterday.
Yep.
Right. Which, you know, we've already got a bunch of people interested in the chapter now because of that.
Right.
So I appreciate that. And then today, one of our members, our vice president for Alma City Entrepreneurs, Bree Logue, is hosting her women's empowerment event.
And Jessica is speaking
at it. My wife is speaking at it. So that's what we were talking about earlier. When you run in these circles and you surround yourself with like-minded individuals, and then you get to do cool stuff like this, like me and my wife have back-to-back nights of events.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and to add on to that, not only doing this, but we drove down to Austin today to do lunch with a new chapter that's launching there. They're launching next week. We're driving back to Austin, going to go do a happy hour with them. So it's not been our MO, but we're going to start doing this more often where we're driving now, especially if it's in a reachable area, to do these type of events, because, you know, you can do a lot. I mean, all of our meetings are done virtually, but there is something to be said about a handshake and a hug. I mean, it just brings the human side to the whole thing. And it's, you know, you're always surprised when you meet somebody that you've always seen virtually.
Right.
Sometimes they're taller than you expect.
Yeah.
They're shorter, right?
So, they look really good from the neck up.
Yeah. It's the truth. And so it's just really, really cool to watch people, you know, show up, come together, lean in, you know. And we always seem to do things a little bit different. So I tell everybody, you know, if you really want to check out SCN Success Champion Networking, go visit a chapter, because it's really something you have to experience to see how different that it is from everything else out there.
It is. It's tough to explain. But what I always say is it's like a hybrid between BNI and a mastermind.
Yeah, you know, I usually say between BNI and Vistage, and that kind of gets you a good mix of what's going on. Because, you know, we're running different meeting styles. Mm-hmm. It's done via Zoom, so you can't have a boring meeting. You got to have structure and process, which is going to go off the rails. So
when I visited my first chapter, this acronym kept getting thrown around, BC this, BC that. And I'm like, what the heck is a BC? And it turns out it's one of the most important KPIs in our network, and really the start of everything. And can you walk us through not only what a VC is, but how to run a good VC?
Yeah, for sure. So a VC is a virtual coffee. And so it's a Zoom one-on-one with another person. And a lot of us were raised up and, you know, you do a one-on-one, you go, okay, you get a half hour, tell me who you are. I get a half hour, tell me who you are. Not in my world, but I want to get the business fast as possible. So when I'm doing a virtual coffee with somebody, I usually say, hey, I'm sure you have a beautiful business and a beautiful background. I love it. You know, I can look at your LinkedIn profile, see your history.
Yeah.
So give me a 2-second overview of how you got into what you did. I'll tell you what I did, and then let's get after it. And immediately after that, go through that very short stunt. I'm like, cool, let's open up LinkedIn. Tell me what industry your best client's in. And as soon as they do that, I'm like, okay, who else sells to that industry? And then I'm going to start making introductions as fast as possible. Most networking was taught around the idea of you got to get referrals, right? A referral by definition, you know, is, you know, an introduction with a sales call attached. Like you're somebody's looking for your service and you want to make the sale.
And you could be assholes. So,
yes.
You remember that.
Right. There's an unwritten law that says you can be an asshole to salespeople, right? So, but a virtual coffee, man, you can sit across from somebody and make an introduction to other industries that sell exactly to who they're looking for, right? And that are not competition. And you can just introduce those people right after each other. And, you know, I tell the story about the young gal who did the college, you know, services, and her number one referral source was bookkeepers. Nobody was referring her because nobody wanted to admit they couldn't afford to send their kids to college.
Right.
So I told her, I said, you tell people you do college tuition assistance. I'd love to meet your bookkeeper. And because that became her biggest referral source, she tripled her business in, you know, about 6 months because everywhere she went, she said, hey, I help people with tuition assistance. I'd love to meet your bookkeeper. Mm-hmm. And about every third bookkeeper she met had clients that were automatically looking for somebody that could help with college tuition assistance.
So with everything like this, there's a foundation to it, right? Yep. And that was one of the big takeaways from the event yesterday was the triangle method that you walked through. So at the foundation of what Donnie's talking about is the triangle method. Yep. Can you walk through that?
So imagine a triangle, and at the top of the triangle, you just put YOU, right? You at the top of the triangle. In the dead center of that triangle, you think about what is your favorite client, right? Come up with your best client, your favorite client, and write down what industry that client is in. Okay. And so you can't think about all your clients because you'd be like, I can sell to anybody, whatever crap comes up. Mm-hmm. I want your best client, what industry they're in. You put that dead center. Then on the bottom left and bottom right, you think through, okay, what other two industries sell to that ideal client?
Okay.
So I, you know, earlier was talking to somebody who did, I'll just go with, you know, wealth management can work just fine. Mm-hmm. So somebody in wealth management, they're doing a lot more corporate 401ks and the likes, right? They're not doing the one-off, you know, individuals. But somebody in wealth management, you know, they're going to be selling into a lot of manufacturing, a lot of, you know, mid-sized companies that are having 50 to 100 employees type of deal.
Right.
And so if you think through that, who else sells to that size of company? Well, it's going to be your telecom, your MSP IT companies.
Right.
It's going to be, you know, your health and benefits, your PEO, the payroll companies,
consultants,
right? So if you start thinking through all those people, I'm not likely going to hear somebody saying, hey, I need to roll over 401k for all my employees. Right. Man, you know how many HR consultants I know, how many CFOs I know, how many freaking MSPs, telecom, like I can make all these introductions for you. And if you meet enough people who sell your ideal client, man, you can meet one person that can give you 1,000 referrals versus me trying to look for that one perfect referral for you. It completely changes the dynamic of how you network.
This method that you're using, you actually used at Sandler, and it's one of the reasons you became one of the top salespeople.
Right?
Was it the construction group?
So what I found was I was really struggling to find where could I find a place where there was a ton of people who were trying to sell towards my perfect clients. So I joined a Greater Forward Builders Association, and you know, I didn't want to do sales training for builders because you have one dude sitting in a house, somebody walks in, you go, hey, you want to buy a house? Cool, sales done, right? That's the entire process. I didn't want that. So but I realized that in that association there was 90 custom home builders. So they built homes from scratch. And I didn't want to sell to them, but there was vendors that sold shingles, wood, you know, wood, painting, siding, windows, and they had thousands of freaking salespeople. That's who I wanted. Mm-hmm. So I joined a builder association. I started making friends with all the builders, taking them out for golf, beers, you know, you name it, make relationships with them. And the funny thing is, about 6-7 months of doing that, all the vendors started coming up to me like, how the hell do you have all these relationships with the builders? And I said, oh, you want to meet them? And I started taking the vendors and meeting the different builders. And the largest deal I closed in my life was 4,000 salespeople across North America. Because I introduced the number one custom home builder to the number one lumber company. And they made a massive deal together. And then the CEO of the lumber company flew in so we could talk about doing sales training. Yeah, so it's all about, if you can get around people that are selling to your ideal clients that are not competition, mm-hmm. like those home builders, they love going out and they're just good old boys. They wanted to go have drinks. They wanted to go to all this stuff, and they didn't want to be sold to. So if I could find a situation where I could bring these vendors in and meet them, that it wasn't this hard sell, it was let's go do something.
Right.
It just changed the dynamic of the conversation and made me a lot of damn money.
That's massive. And this is a lot of what you teach in Success Champions. It's not just the network, though. Y'all have a high-level group.
Yep. So we have Champions Table, which is a mastermind. And that's really focused on people that are a little bit in the game, you know, 3 to 5 years in the game. And they've gotten their business to a certain level. And now it's time to become the face of that business.
Okay.
Right. In this day and age, you know, the only thing we get to keep with, no matter what happens to our company, hit massive success or the company crumbles, our personal brand is the only thing we can take with us. So in Champions Table, we focus a lot on how do you actually become the face of the company and work through the dynamics of that. Because for a lot of people, showing up on social media, you know, showing up on putting out content, being guests on podcasts and the likes and all that kind of stuff, people really struggle with it because the hardest thing to teach is the stuff that comes easy to us. Mm-hmm. Like the things we naturally just have figured out is the hardest things to teach somebody else. So we focus a lot of time and energy on how you actually even put yourself out there, how you package that up
right,
so other people can meet you and wrap your head around it, you know. So it's amazing to watch people start showing up once you can teach them a few things and how to do it.
Well, and then the business that they get to do is so much more engaged and so much stickier.
Yes.
Is the best way I could say it, because you feel like when you start doing business with you, you know them.
Yes.
Versus, oh, this is just a product and a price point.
100%. You know, I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've gone and spoke somewhere, been on a stage or something, and somebody's coming up to me and like, dude, I've been following you for 6-7 months, you know, and I'm like,
that's the best.
That's the kind of thing you're like, yeah, that's what we're trying to do all along. And it's not about trying to gain this massive following, although that's cool. Mm-hmm. It's about really pouring into people and helping them, coaching them, and doing it from a one-to-many perspective of what you get to do from stage and social media and the likes.
Fantastic. So what is the future of Success Champions Network to look like for you guys right now?
Yeah, so our next biggest milestones is we want to get to 1,000 members in the chapters throughout North America. Mm-hmm. So we're aiming at that direction. We want to take the Champions Summit, which is our micro summit. We want to take that more on tour. So it's basically flying into an area and doing a half-day summit, taking our chapter members that we have so much talent inside the chapters, like you running this one. Mm-hmm. You know, we want to be able to come into an area, run a half-day summit, put some of the members up on stage, let's showcase them. Usually I'll come in and anchor the whole thing. Sometimes we do live podcasts and stuff so the crowd can participate. Mm-hmm. So we want to do more of that throughout North America. Of course, we want to continue to blow up the Badass Business Summit.
Yeah.
You know, but ultimately, like, the biggest dream is what we're aiming at is 100,000 members is my big goal. But I want to be able to buy a huge ranch so we can turn that into a huge wildlife park, retreat, ren fairs, do the whole nine yards. But that's the big dream we're aiming for.
Man, that I just smiled when you said that, because one of my favorite events that I've ever gone to was Ruth Camp, and David Taggart and Jeff Bearden hosted that.
I haven't heard of that one.
Yeah, and well, it was the first annual one 3 or 4 months ago, and I got to speak at it, and I'm glad I did, because it was a pricey ticket, because it was at this beautiful hunting ranch
right
out in the middle of nowhere. I think it was like something Rock, I can't remember, but it was out in the middle of Texas and just beautiful deer, yeah, axis, everything, yep, walking around. And that is just, yeah, that's absolutely 100%.
That's where we're at. That's 100. I mean, I love the idea of having retreat and there's a giraffe walking by the window, right?
Yeah, it looks good. It's fantastic.
But in the same token, you know, we want to be able to host really cool events. Like, we want to put a Ren Fair on there. We want to be able to do, mm-hmm, you know, Christmas villages and stuff. So it's more of an all year round, not just, yeah, a one off or a couple of retreats and excursions. We want to create an entire world for people to come hang out and do.
Well, and then you've got the business demographic, the entrepreneur, the corporate, as well as,
yep,
the everyday person,
yep,
that just wants to come see Christmas lights.
100%. Yeah.
Fantastic.
And we have been thinking through this for quite a while, even starting to look at land and what that would look like to put, mm-hmm, it all together. So, and Success Champion Networking is our big play to allow us to make that happen.
No, that makes a ton of sense. So you're in this space now, and you're gaining a lot of traction in it where, okay, whether you like it or not, you're an influencer, right?
Isn't that always weird to hear?
Yeah, it is weird. Yeah, 100%. And so now that you're getting into that space, how do you kind of, I guess, keep your bearings about you and make sure that you're continuing to to, I guess, communicate the values that got you here?
You know, what's funny is, one, my wife is awesome in my corner. Mm-hmm. She doesn't allow me to get an ego,
okay,
as much as I try. She keeps me very humble. I've got really close family around me that also keeps me very, very humble, which is a lot of fun because I need an ego check every once in a while because mm-hmm. we all get a little big for our breeches, I think.
Okay.
But I get more kicks out of watching somebody that's done a lot of traditional networking and they're just frustrated and be able to help that person go, where's this been my entire life?
Yeah.
Right. That's for me is probably the biggest rush. And people say they just want to help one person. I don't want to just help one person. I don't care if one person, I want hundreds of people to get value out of it. Right. You know, and I think people will say, I just hope one person finds value. No, no, no. I want to help the mass. Right. And I think that drives me more than anything. You know, I love being in front of a room and watching the head nods. I love the questions coming at me direct.
Yes.
And you know you're doing something right when all of a sudden the questions really start coming through and people are starting to lean in. So that's the kind of stuff that knows that I'm still heading the same direction. I'm still maintaining that level of I'm still human, you know, type of thing, instead of letting it go to my head. You know, I got a long way to go, you know, with all this, but it's really fun right now.
I couldn't agree more because, you know, when you do a talk or a speech, and you're very good at, you know, making it look relaxed and effortless, but mine are typically tactical systems and super intense. And like, if you're not taking notes, you're screwed.
I'm never going to be that guy.
I wrap it up nicely, you know, but in the Q&A is where I really come alive because I get to tell stories, you know, and I try to tell stories in my speech too, but I also want to get that value out so they can actually execute it. Right. But in the Q&A is definitely when you come alive.
Yeah.
It's natural.
Well, because it's natural, right? It's completely off the cuff, unscripted, mm-hmm. uncanned. So they're getting the raw side of you. But, you know, in the same token, I drive some speakers nuts because I never know what I'm going to speak about before I get on stage, right? I roll up and just go because I want more top of mind what's working for me right now. There are some similar stories and things that I'll do between a lot of speeches,
mm-hmm.
like teaching the triangle and things like that. I know just brings a ton of value to people.
Those are dialed
in. You know, but for the most part, I'm just going to go with the flow of the crowd. And I want to read the crowd more. Like last night, it was late, happy hours, a couple cocktails. I was watching a couple people doze off a little bit. And I'm like, okay, I got to grab them. So that's why I gently threw out, let's do some Q&A to bring them in. And like you said earlier, as soon as that one question comes through, it's gone. Right?
Yeah.
Everybody pops back up and they're all in.
Yeah. As soon as they see a few people be uncomfortable
and
ask the question, now they're comfortable enough to ask.
Absolutely.
That initial vulnerability helps so much. So when you look at, you know, this is a question I like to ask all the guests, and I'm more than sure we have it, but I'm kind of curious. I want to look at your answer from the first podcast to now. I bet you it's changed a little bit. But the final question is, what does legacy mean to you, and what legacy do you want to leave behind?
You know, that's a fun question. I'd love to know what I said early on because I hadn't thought about legacy a whole lot most of this journey. People ask me, what are you going to do with the business? Are you going to sell it someday?
Yeah.
You know, what's that kind of end goal? And I want the teachings and the lives we've impacted, I want people to remember my name like they remember Zig Ziglar, like they remember Jim Rohn in the classics. So I want to leave something that people are going to be using for the next 500 years, 150, 100 years, right? And are going to provide enough value to the marketplace. Because, I grew up on Zig Ziglar. I grew up on Jim Rohn and those guys. And I still lean on some of the lessons learned and things I did from them. And I don't have no desire to be a motivational speaker, but I want to provide enough value and content that people are just using it for generations to come.
And it's timeless, 100%. Yeah. And one of the things I noticed about those guys is the people that are impacted, the majority, probably 95% of people that are impacted, never purchase anything from them.
Correct.
You know, so it's this...
If they did it, the worst is they bought a CD, right?
Or a book.
Right, a book, right? But people were able to garner such value from that that it impacted and changed their lives.
Yeah, and then generation to generation from there.
Yep.
Awesome. Brother, well, I appreciate you coming on the show.
Absolutely, dude.
Thank you so much. It's been a blast, and we love having you down here. Appreciate the
support. Oh, dude, man, thanks for inviting me in. This has been really cool. I hadn't spent much time in San Antonio before. I've been down here once or twice. Y'all's roads suck.
Yeah.
The freeways are horrible. As Peyton said, your roads look like somebody took, you know, cooked spaghetti and just threw it on the ground. He said, that's a highway system.
all the tar and the cracks and everything.
Oh, it's crazy. I mean, and now, of course, they're redoing the roads. So now you're like driving on lanes. You're not even sure if you're in the lane still.
Yeah.
I mean, it was wild. But now this has been a lot of fun. It's been cool to hang. This facility is really awesome to live in. You know, and I'll tell you guys, if you watch this on a replay or anything else, you know, give Doug a follow, share these episodes out with him. And as I can tell you, running my own show, building an audience is one of the toughest things in the world.
Yeah.
So if you guys share this out to other people, help pour into Doug and the things he's doing out there. Cause the dude putting out some really, really cool content. It's kind of fun watching your story unfold as you continue to do all this. So keep that up. I'll keep heckling from the cheap seats.
Yeah.
So. Heck yeah. but yeah, share this stuff out. And seriously, thanks for inviting us down.
Absolutely. It's been a blast. All right, guys, let's get building.